Hey, this is Renzo from the LAO here to do a sound check.
Hey, Renzo, this is Mic 1.
Mic 1 sounds good.
Mic 2?
Mic 2 sounds good.
Mic 3?
Mic 3 sounds good.
Testifier 1?
Testifier 1 good.
Testifier 2?
Testifier 2 sounds good.
Testifier 3?
Testifier 3 sounds good.
Mic 4?
Mic 4 sounds good.
Mic 5.
Mic 5 sounds good.
Mic 6.
6 good.
Chair mic 1.
Chair 1 good.
And chair mic 2.
Chair mic 2 good.
Awesome. Thanks, Renzo.
Yep, have a good meeting. Bye.
Call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Today's March 26th. We're in State Capitol, Senate Finance Room. Present today, Chairman Stedman, Chairman Olson, Senator Keel, Senator Merrick, Senator Kaufman. And we're joined a little tardy as Senator Crump.
Yes, sir.
Senator Hoffman. So we do have a full contingent of finance members. We have four items on today's agenda. Senate Bill 55, contribution rate. Senate Bill 21, Alaska Work and Save Program. Senate Bill 78, Retirement Systems. Senate Bill 196, Behavioral Health Crisis Surcharge and Funds. The first item, Senate Bill 55, TRS contribution rate, PERS/TRS Social Security, or SBS. This is the fourth hearing on this bill. We previously heard public testimony, reviewed the fiscal notes, and we have a CS for introduction. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Senate Finance Committee adopt the committee substitute for Senate Bill 55, Finance, version G, as in Gullivan, and bring it before the committee as our working document.
Thank you, Senator Keel. I will object for Rose Foley, staff to Senator Stedman, to explain to the committee what the CS does. Ms. Foley, please identify yourself, and you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Rose Foley, staff to Senator Stedman. The G version before you makes a couple big changes. The first is in Section 2, and it changes the phase-in time period to get new entrants to SBS from 3 years to 6 years. So the employee and employer will each contribute 1% in the first year, 2% in the second year, 3% in the third year, until they reach full contribution at 6.13% in the sixth year of participation. Section 2 also allows an employer to provide a benefit that would be equivalent to SBS or Social Security, but maybe in a different format, such as deferred compensation with an employer match or another arrangement the employer may offer to employees. A different benefit, such as deferred compensation, will also be stepped in at the same rate as SBS participation. This also allows employees to contribute up to the maximum of 6.13% beginning in year one, but there's no obligation for the employer to match anything other than the stepped-in rates that are set out in statute. And the final change is an effective date update to July 1st, 2029.
Are there questions on the CS? Senator Stedman, do you support the CS?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I think this is a good phase-in, and it gives the communities and the employers time to adjust for it. I think it's a very good compromise.
With that, I would remove my objection. Is there further objection to adopting the CS? Seeing none, that CS is adopted. Final comments from the prime sponsor?
Mr. Chairman, I think this gives the opportunity to fill in a gap of all our teachers across the state and a lot of the employers that are in the state system, and levels the contributions in the retirement opportunities that all state workers have, and puts teachers on par with that, because the teaching environment turns only at 15% of their salary going into retirement, where a state worker ends up with the employer and employee portion at 25. So you can't fix and elevate the teacher's retirement anywhere near on par with the state worker, and I think this levels the system. And on another note, for all the employers that have joined the state system that aren't in Social Security and don't have SBS, supplemental benefit systems, for their employee, you know, they've got off and have not, in a labor contract, negotiated a replacement for that, because there's some employers that have, but a lot of them haven't. I don't have a lot of sympathy for that, because the personally, from my viewpoint, Social Security is the foundation of all retirement across the country. And without that or its replacement, it's pretty hard to keep people on par.
In your view, with the adoption of this bill, do you feel that it will entice new teachers to teach in Alaska?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman. Regardless of whatever happens within the discussion of the core retirement of defined benefit or defined contribution, regardless of that, how that outcomes, this is in addition to that. It doesn't supplant the other ones. I think it will be very beneficial to the teachers. And we're talking, and other people that aren't involved in it, we're talking, you know, for a 25-year employee, we're talking somewhere around $800,000, $600,000 to $1 million per employee in retirement additive. That is significant. That will not be replicated with the other debate in the building at all. So this is a standalone issue, Mr. Chairman, and I hope we get support for the bill.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Do we have questions by finance members of the prime sponsor? Seeing none, Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the committee substitute for Senate Bill 55, Finance Version G, from committee with attached and forthcoming fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Is there objection? Seeing no objection, that bill will be sent to the next committee referral, which will be the Rules Committee. We'll take a brief at ease while senators sign the report. Today's agenda, Senate Bill 21. Seems as though that number rings a bell to me. Senate Bill 21, Alaska Work and Save Program Retirement Savings Bonds. This bill was heard on February the 17th. We took public testimony at that time. One amendment has been offered, which we will address after we take up the CS. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Senate Finance Committee adopt committee substitute for Senate Bill 21, Finance, Version H, as in HUNA, and bring it before the committee as our working document.
I will object for an explanation by Liz Harpole, staff to Senator Olson. Please come to the table and explain this, what the CS does.
Thank you. Good morning. For the record, Liz Harpold, staff to Senator Olson and the Senate Finance Committee. The CS in front of you, version H, makes a few changes. First, it pulls the program entirely under the Department of Revenue. Before, there was involvement with the Department of Labor. That's no longer the case. It removes fines and penalties for employers not in compliance, and it updates the definition of employer to more five or more employees for not less for in business less, not less than 3 years. And these are changes that were brought forward by the bill sponsor, and I'll let them make any comments as to their intent behind that.
Thank you. Ms. Harpo, ask Senator Wilikowski to come to the table, and do you support the committee substitute, Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Bill Wilikowski, State Senator for East Anchorage. And yes, we do support the CS. The ideas that came up that are in the CS are all ideas that came from this committee. There were, at the first hearing, there were a number of issues that were addressed. And then we had the President Trump's State of the Nation, where he suggested that there may be federal incentives for similar types of plans as this. He suggested that there could be a $1,000 match for retirement savings. And so based on comments from Senator Stedman and working with his office, we've added a provision to ensure the program is designed so that participating Alaskans can benefit from any future federal incentives through their work and save accounts. We've revised, based on comments and concerns from the committee, we revised the definition of employer to exempt businesses with five or fewer employees. And we also added a provision that it only applies to businesses that have been in operation for more than 3 years. And that's similar to what a number of other states do. We didn't want to be too aggressive with very small employers. Based on concerns we heard from a number of the members, including Senator Kaufman and others, we've removed the fines and penalties for businesses. Our goal is not to penalize businesses. Our goal is to just provide this service for small businesses. And so we've removed the fines and penalties for businesses. And lastly, we clarified that employer guidance and training will be coordinated through the Department of Revenue. And I would just add, this bill has widespread support. We've gotten support from the governor's Commission on Aging, Teachers Insurance and Annuity Association, the Food Bank of Alaska, AARP, and dozens of small businesses all across Alaska. So I appreciate the committee taking this up. I would just make one point on the fiscal note. It seems very generous. It seems like a very high fiscal note. I don't know that I want to have a big fight over the fiscal note here, and but I would say to the committee if it does pass and it does get to the other body, that I would absolutely work with them. And I would note that in Delaware, for example, they in their similar type of program had an appropriation of $129,700 for their plan. So we think this can be done for much less than what the division is suggesting. I'd also note that in a number of other states, they have a self-sustaining fee that they add. So they would charge accounts. I know, for example, Delaware charges a 22 annual account fee. And that's probably how they keep their costs so low. They don't charge the employers, but the employees to manage the account. There's basis points, and then there's fees that are added. Vermont has a $26 fee. Minnesota has a $24 fee. Nevada has a $22 fee. So to keep this funded, we think that is something that could be done down the road, and the Department of Revenue suggested that we look for other revenue options. We think that's something that other states are doing. And, again, I'm hesitant, and since we're past the halfway mark, to slow this down, but I would certainly be willing to work with the House if this does pass this body and committee to work on the fiscal note.
Thank you, Senator Wilikowski. I will remove my objection to the adoption of the CS. Is there further objection to the adoption of the CS? Seeing none, the CS is our working document. No, we need a motion to adopt the CS.
I moved it.
You moved it? Okay. So there is, it is our working document. We have an amendment by Senator Kaufman. Senator?
Thank you. I move amendment number one.
And I will object for explanation.
Thank you. Well, first I want to say to the bill sponsor, thank you for the things that you worked on. I appreciate that. I like the carrots more than sticks approach, so thank you very much. This amendment, the intent of it, is just to reduce the mandatory workload, I guess, on very small businesses, move the threshold up to 10. And I feel that when you're much smaller, even with the phase in, life can be overwhelming. And so I'd like to raise that in this amendment so that it says has employed more than 10 other persons in the state for not less than 3 years. And then the other language in the amendment is to clarify and make it very clear that it's voluntary for smaller employers. So it adds a clarification that you're welcome to join if you're under this threshold, and it only kicks in with a threshold of 10 employees.
Senator Wilikowski, comment upon the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the concerns, and I can't support this amendment, and here's why. First of all, the changes that we made in the CS, that this committee made in the CS, we took out the penalties. So, again, it's mandatory, but there's no penalties and there's no fines associated with not complying. We're trying to do this with the absolute lightest touch. I'm concerned that by removing that, or rather increasing it to 10 employees, you're probably taking out a pretty large number of small employees. We don't know the statistics for certain, but we do know that 90% of the small businesses in the state, they don't break it down by 5, 10, 20 employees, but we, according to the research that we've done, or had done by legislative research analysis, there's 17,343 small business employers in Alaska. 90% of them are 1 to 19 people. And so our concern is that we just don't know what the number is between 5 and 10 employees. And so I would be concerned that you're taking a large number of people that we're trying to get at. I think when employers hit a certain size, they start offering retirement programs, and the whole goal behind this is to get those employers that aren't offering any retirement at all, any 401k at all. So I think this defeats that purpose. Again, there's no fines, there's no penalties for employers that don't comply, very light touch. And the other concern is that it ends up raising the cost. When you have more people out, you have the effect that a smaller pool actually raises the cost for everyone else. So we want to keep as many companies in this as possible. Again, I appreciate the intent. I actually don't have a problem with the second part, which is to make it plan voluntary for those under five, as it's currently written, because we want as many companies to participate as possible, and if you're under five and you want to participate, we have no problem with that at all. I cannot support lowering, or rather increasing, that number to 10.
Senator Kaufman.
Well, we're imposing things upon employers, whether through ballot initiatives or for legislation, and I'm just trying to set at ease folks that may be concerned, may be overwhelmed if they're very small, very young business. And when there's a law, even if there's not an enforcement mechanism, and it's not clear that you'll be prosecuted or somehow fined for it, there's still good-hearted folks want to comply with laws, and so I'm just afraid that that puts a burden on a small young business. And I love the savings concept. I think on-ramps to all of that are great, and that's why I just want to make it just a little bit lighter touch as we keep coming up with ideas for businesses to do.
Revitties. We'll send the Finance Committee back to order. I will maintain my objection. Roll call, please.
Senator Keel.
No.
Senator Merrick.
Yes.
Senator Cronk.
Yes.
Senator Kaufman.
Yes.
Senator Stedman.
No.
Senator Hoffman.
No.
Senator Olson.
No.
3 yeas, 4 nays.
That amendment fails. That brings the bill before the committee. Any closing comments? You have a question from Senator Stedman.
Just a brief question. I think I just saw this amendment here that just failed here just a few minutes ago, and I just urge the bill sponsor to look at that. I don't know what the other states have in numbers and stuff like that, but check that. I also appreciate the bill sponsor's willingness to work in, as it goes through a further process dealing with if there should be a base fee of $20 or $25 or some number. I think that's a good idea. That's about the only comments, Mr. Chairman.
Further comments or questions by Senate Finance members? Closing comments, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's good, wise advice. I would note that it seems like five is the number of employees. It is a number that is used by a number of the states. There are some states that say one employee. There are some states that have higher numbers, but eight seems to be a number, or five seems to be a number that many employers do, that many states do use. We did add the three-year provision, so you had to be in business for 3 years, so that we didn't want to immediately create an onerous burden for just startup businesses. But I appreciate the committee's work on this. I think it's a better bill, and I think this is going to help a lot of Alaskans, thousands of Alaskans, and a lot of Alaskan businesses who are asking for this. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Wilikowski. Will of the committee, Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 21, Version H, from committee with attached fiscal notes and forthcoming fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Is there objection to move the committee to the next committee of referral? Seeing none, that bill will go to the Rules Committee, where I'm sure it will receive favorable consideration. We'll take a brief at ease at this time. Call the Senate Finance Committee back to order. We'll take up the third item on today's agenda, House Bill 78, Retirement Systems Defined Benefit Option. We have a CS to introduce, and we'll set this bill aside for those members that are concerned. It is not the intent of this committee to hold this bill. We will be moving on once we address amendments after the CS. The amendment deadline is on Monday, March 30th at 5 p.m. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Senate Finance Committee adopt Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 78 Finance, version H, as in Haynes, and bring it before the committee as our working document.
And I will object so we can hear from Liz Harpold, staff to Senator Olson, to explain the CS to the committee. Ms. Harpold.
Thank you. For the record, Liz Harpold, staff to Senator Olson and the Senate Finance Committee. The CS does a couple of things. Version H brings back the choice for new employees to either enter into the defined benefit system or the defined contribution system for both the teacher, those that are within the teacher retirement system or the public employees retirement system. Additionally, legal suggested an edit that has been incorporated too that amends the average monthly compensation language for peace officers and firefighters. In the presentations that have been made so far on this bill, it's been generally understood how this would happen, but this actually adds that into the bill to make sure that there's no question about that.
Thank you, Ms. Harpold. We'll invite Representative Kopp and his staff if they want to come forward and address the CS. Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. I fully support the committee substitute. The concept has strong bipartisan support in the body, and we appreciate the intent behind this change. We feel like it actually strengthens the bill, makes our employers more competitive, offering a dual-track system, and choice generally equals competitiveness, and also reduces long-term cost exposure. I think it's a good sound policy, and I fully support it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Kopp. Do members of the Finance Committee have questions of the prime sponsor on the CS? Seeing none, I remove my objection to the adoption of the CS. Is there further objection to the adoption of the CS? That CS is adopted. As I said, we have a deadline of Monday, 5 p.m., for amendments. They should be forwarded on to Liz Harpold, staff to Senator Olson. We'll set this bill aside for further consideration. That brings us to the last item on today's agenda, Senate Bill 196, the Behavioral Health Crisis Surcharge and Fines. This is the first hearing on this bill. Invite Senator Kawasaki and his staff to introduce Senate Bill 196. Senator, please introduce yourself and your staff, and what are you trying to accomplish with this legislation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Finance Committee. I'll just be very brief because I know there's a couple people online who wanted to testify, and there is a presentation that goes into more detail on how the bill works. I'll just say that 911 is a number that's ubiquitous. Everybody knows if they dial those three numbers, they get a police or they get the fire department in emergencies. 988 was a number that was started under the Biden administration in 2020 to address one simple thing, and that's people who are in behavioral crisis and potentially thinking of committing suicide. And so, as you know, Alaska has one of the highest highest rates of suicide in the country at number one or two. And for the record, this is Senator Scott Kawasaki, District P, representing Fairbanks. So to continue on where I was at, we are number one or number two consistently in the number of suicides per capita, which is a terrible ranking to have. And if you're a veteran, you're twice as likely, you're almost two times as likely to suffer from suicide than a civilian. If you're Alaska Native male, that number rises to four times the national average, which is absolutely devastating for communities who have suffered loss. So this 988 surcharge would essentially put a 98-cent charge similar to the enhanced 911 surcharge that's on current phones. It's anticipated to raise between $6 and $8 million so that 988 can continue. And the reason why we need this is it's a stable and steady funding source. Since federal funding has declined for the 988 surcharge since, or 988 since 2020, and also because the surcharge, or because the 988 is so utilized, nearly doubling in the number of calls it received in just this last year. So I'll leave the details to my staff, Jenna Calhoun, if it pleases the committee.
Are there specific questions that committee members may have? If not, we will go to invited testimony. The first individual to testify. Brief, Eddie. Meeting back to order. Jenna Calhoun, do you have brief comments before we go to public testimony?
Thank you, Chair. For the record, Jenna Calhoun, staff to Senator Kawasaki, just to go through a brief presentation of in detail what SB 196 does. As Senator Kawasaki says, it establishes a 98 cents behavioral health services surcharge for each wireline and each wireless phone that has a billing address in Alaska. The wireless telephone customers will not be subject to more than one behavioral health surcharge per wireless line. And customers that have more than 100 local access lines, for example, the legislature. We have many phones in this building, but we would only be subject to behavioral health services surcharge for the first 100 lines. It dictates that the behavioral health crisis service charge must be its own line item on the customer's phone bill. It will be included in the total amount owed by the customer, but it will not be considered as revenue for the telephone company. This is actually very similar. If you all look at your phone bills, there is a 911 services surcharge. That's a dollar, so this is 2 cents below that. It also creates the expectation that the telephone companies, they will remit the behavioral health crisis services surcharge not later than 60 days after the end of the month in which the amount was collected. And for their trouble, they will be entitled to the greater of 1% of the collected amount, or $150 to be in consideration of their administration costs. This also dictates that the telephone companies, they're not obligated to take legal action to enforce the collection of the behavioral health crisis services surcharge, though if the company does attempt to collect any unpaid debt, then they must also attempt to collect any unpaid surcharges. The telephone companies also must provide an annual list that includes the names and addresses of customers with unpaid behavioral health crisis services surcharge that the executive branch can do with as it will. It establishes that the Behavioral Health Crisis Services Fund is going to be within the general fund. The Department of Administration will separately account for the Behavioral Health Crisis Services surcharge. Then they will deposit that sum into the Behavioral Health Crisis Services Fund. The legislature will then appropriate the annual estimated balance in the fund to the Department of Health. And then it should be noted that this does not create a dedicated fund. The purpose of the fund is to establish, operate, maintain, and improve the 988 initiative, provide services to a person experiencing behavioral health crisis, recruit and retain qualified behavioral health services personnel, and provide specialized training to at-risk communities, including culturally, linguistically competent behavioral health services. This also includes our veterans, who are at a higher risk of suicide than the general population. It provides prevention services tailored to the populations that experience higher rates of suicide than the rest of the state, raise awareness of 988, and collect, analyze, and report data relevant to the behavioral health crisis services, and provide administration oversight and evaluate how the Behavioral Health Crisis Services Fund is being administered. So these monies are not being used blindly. They're being used smartly using data-driven models. The reason that this is needed, as Senator Kawasaki said, is that we have some high rates of suicide here in Alaska. And we also have rising rates of overdose deaths. In 2025, the 98 number fell to 22,458 calls. And then 2024, it was increased. So in 2024, it's 16,878. This will also alleviate the burden on 911 dispatchers and responders. In 2017, an average of 10% of law enforcement agencies' total budgets and then 20% of the total law enforcement staff time was spent responding to mental health crises. This would alleviate that burden and save money in the public safety realm of the state. And right now, as y'all quite do know, the current fiscal situation does not guarantee stable funding. So SB 196 is a revenue measure that would generate, again, $6 to $8 million. So in the end, the purposes of the fund would be, one, to save Alaskan lives, and two, to save public safety dollars and time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Calhoun. We will go to invited testimony. Angela Kimball, Chief Advocacy Officer for Inseparable. Ms. Kimball, are you online?
Yes, thank you. Co-Chairs Hoffman, Olson, and Segman, and members of the committee. As you mentioned, my name is Angela Kimball. I'm Chief Advocacy Officer at Inseparable. We are a national mental health advocacy organization, and I'm calling in today in strong support of SB 196. I've been asked to share the national picture on crisis services and specifically what the data tells us about cost savings and outcomes. And as a finance committee, that's exactly the right question to ask. First, the status quo is expensive. When communities lack a functioning crisis system, those costs don't disappear, they shift. They shift to emergency departments, where psychiatric boarding can cost hospitals over $2,200 per episode, and patients wait days, not hours. They shift to law enforcement, where officers spend hours on mental health calls they weren't trained to handle. And they shift to jails, psychiatric hospitals, and out-of-state facilities, the most expensive interventions we have. Alaska's paying those costs right now. The question before this committee isn't whether Alaska will spend money on behavioral health crises. It already is. The question is whether they'll spend that money wisely. The evidence on what works is very clear. The crisis now model, someone to talk to, someone to respond, and a safe place for help, has more than a decade of outcome data behind it. The most comprehensive example comes from Maricopa County in Arizona, which serves 4 million people. After implementing the full crisis continuum of care, Maricopa County, over several years, freed the equivalent of 37 full-time police officers from mental health transport duty. It eliminated 45 cumulative years of patients waiting in the emergency departments, saving hospitals $37 million in avoided costs. And a $100 million investment in the crisis continuum over the years avoided $260 million in inpatient psychiatric expenses alone. That's not a close call on return on investment. And the Maricopa results are not an outlier. Research published in Psychiatric Services found mobile crisis programs reduced average cost per case by 23% compared to a standard police response. And the Minnesota study found crisis stabilization programs returned $2.16 for every dollar invested. And now the 98 surcharge. It's a proven reliable funding mechanism. 12 states, including Oregon and Washington, have enacted telephone surcharges to fund crisis systems. At 98 cents per line, SB 196 would generate about $6 to $8 million annually. That's dedicated, stable, flexible funding, not another grant that expires or federal dollars that come with strings attached. Alaska's current crisis infrastructure relies on a patchwork of general funds, Medicaid dollars, and federal grants that were never designed to sustain 24/7 crisis care. And SAMHSA's own national quality framework requires states to integrate 988 with mobile crisis teams and stabilization facilities. Right now, Alaska can't meet that standard. And the cost of inaction in Alaska is high. Alaska, as you've heard, has the second highest adult suicide rate in the nation and the highest teen suicide rate. Overdose deaths are still rising. The communities most affected, including Alaska Native communities, are also the ones with the least access to crisis care. Last week, young Alaskans traveled to Juneau from Tuxuk Bay to stand on the Capitol steps and call for action. One young man, Jacob Nikolai, told the crowd he had traveled hundreds of miles to be a voice for those he had lost to suicide. That kind of distance, geographic and emotional, is exactly what this bill is trying to close. Representative Nina put it very simply, the way Alaska is currently funding its crisis system has been a patchwork. It's been unreliable. SB 196 fixes that. It doesn't ask Alaskans to spend more on behavioral health. It asks them to stop spending so much on the wrong things and start investing in what works. And I know this not just as an advocate, but as a parent. When my son Alex experienced a severe mental health crisis, a mobile team responded with compassion and with skill. And instead of an ER or a jail cell, he was connected to a crisis stabilization center. That intervention kept him safe, and it gave our family hope. Jacob made that trip to Juneau because he believes help is possible, and every Alaska family deserves to know it will be there when they need it most. I urge your support of SB 196, and thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kimball. We will go to Chief Case with the Anchorage Police Department. Are you online, Chief?
Co-Chairs Hoffman, Olson, Stedman, Vice Chair Merrick, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 196. My name is Sean Case, and I'm the Chief of Police for the Anchorage Police Department and the President of the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police. This legislation represents a critical investment in Alaska's public safety and public health systems by ensuring that individuals experiencing behavioral health crisis receive the right care at the right time. It is time we start thinking about our criminal justice problems as public health problems. For law enforcement agencies like the Anchorage Police Department, this bill is not just about funding mental health services. It's about transforming how we respond to people in crisis. Every day, officers encounter individuals struggling with mental illness, substance use, or suicidal ideations. Too often, these situations escalate because there are limited alternatives to arrest or emergency detention. We just heard some testimony about some national data. In Anchorage, we're lucky enough to have a mobile intervention team that pairs a police officer with a mental health clinician. And our data gives us some important information on how having increased care and behavioral health response to these calls for service can actually impact. My mobile interventions team responds to over 3,000 mental health crisis calls a year. That's an average of over 250 calls every single month. Characteristics from these calls put into perspective the type of crisis that we are facing in Alaska. Some of the benefits of having a team, for example, prevents escalation. Almost 84% of our mobile intervention call responses result in the subject staying in place, stabilized by our teams rather than being removed or detained. Our mobile intervention team arrest, cite, or serve warrants on less than 3% of the population they serve. When we talk about money savings, in the first 3 months of having a mobile intervention team with the Anchorage Police Department, we reduced our emergency room psych ED visits by 50%, 50% in 3 months. These calls for service just waiting to get into the psych ED for police officers was a minimum of 3 hours. That's leaving someone in crisis in handcuffs either in a waiting room or in the back of a patrol car. This matters to law enforcement because we understand arresting someone in crisis is not always the right answer. We're lucky in Anchorage that we have built a system of options. Relying on the criminal justice system temporarily removes a person from a dangerous situation, but it rarely addresses the underlying causes of their behavior. Without access to timely behavioral health care, many individuals cycle repeatedly through our jails, emergency rooms, and streets. This is costly, ineffective, and deeply frustrating for our officers who want to help but lack the tools and resources to do so. By strengthening Alaska's behavioral health crisis system, Senate Bill 196 will reduce unnecessary arrests and jail bookings for individuals whose primary issue is a mental health or substance use crisis. It will free up police resources to focus on crime prevention and community safety. It'll improve officer safety by providing trained crisis responders who can de-escalate volatile situations. And it will connect people to care, reducing repeat calls for service and long-term public safety costs. The Anchorage Police Department and the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police strongly support Senate Bill 196 because we know that public safety and public health are deeply connected. By investing in behavioral health crisis services, we can reduce crime, improve outcomes for the most vulnerable neighbors, and make all of Alaska a safer, healthier place to live. Thank you for your consideration for this important legislation. I urge the committee to advance Senate Bill 196.
Thank you, Chief Case. We will stay in Anchorage, and we will hear from Dennis Leslie with the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Dennis Leslie, Co-Chairs Hoffman, Olsman, and Stedman, and members of the Senate Finance Committee. Like I said, my name is Dennis Leslie. I am the Vice President of the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association. I'm a 911 dispatch supervisor, as well as the chair for the Alaska chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. I bring over 17 years of experience in law enforcement and 16 years of experience in behavioral health and advocacy and volunteerism. And I'd like to speak to you guys through both of those lenses and from both of those perspectives. I'm here today in strong support of SB 196. From the dispatch console, I can tell you that many of the calls that we receive, they are not crimes. They are people that are in a behavioral health crisis. But because of the gaps in our current system, the default response is often law enforcement. While our officers do an incredible job, this is not always the right tool for the situation. SB 196 matters because it creates something we do not currently have, and that's a sustainable funding source. Right now, behavioral health crisis response in Alaska relies heavily on short-term grants and inconsistent funding streams. That makes it incredibly difficult, if not impossible, to build a system that communities can rely on consistently. SB 196 changes that by creating predictable funding to support a statewide crisis response system that will be built to last. This bill is also about using the right resource for the right problem, and that's something that we know that works. Across the country, diversion models like the Crisis Now framework have shown that the majority of behavioral health crisis calls can be safely handled without law enforcement involvement. Often, that's between 70 and 80% success rate with that diversion. That means that thousands of our calls are resolved with care and not custody. It reduces the unnecessary arrests, lowers emergency room utilization, and most importantly, connects people with the help that they actually need. Another way to think about this is through the lens of the healthcare system. In physical health, we don't send every patient to an emergency room. We start with the lowest appropriate level of care, primary care, or urgent care, and we only escalate when it's necessary. Behavioral health should be treated the exact same way. Right now, our system is inverted, and we're often sending the highest level response, which is law enforcement, when a lower, more appropriate level of care would be more effective. SB 196 helps correct that. It allows us to build a system where crisis lines, mobile crisis teams, and stabilization centers serve as that first appropriate point of care, with law enforcement available when it's truly needed. This isn't just better care, it's more efficient care. Every time we send an officer to a call that could be handled by a behavioral health team, we're pulling that officer away from responding to crimes and emergencies where seconds can matter. Diversion strengthens public safety. It ensures that the law enforcement resources are available where they are most needed, while behavioral health professionals handle behavioral health crises. From my work with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, I can tell you this. Alaska continues to face some of the highest suicide rates in the nation. We cannot continue to rely on a system that was not designed to meet this need. SB 196 is an opportunity to build something better. A system that's sustainable, a system that uses the right responses at the right time, and a system that ultimately saves lives while strengthening public safety. Both the Anchorage Police Department's Employees Association and the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention support SB 196, and we urge you guys to support and pass this bill. Thank you guys for your time and your leadership.
Thank you for that testimony, Mr. Lasley. We'll now go to the frozen banks of the Kuskokwim, Bethel, Alaska, and hear from James Bila with the Alaska chapter for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. James, you have the floor.
Good morning, Co-Chair Hoffman, Olson and Stedman, and all the members of Senate Finance. My name is James Bila. I live in Bethel, and I'm testifying in support of Senate Bill 196 as a co-founder and volunteer with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, the Alaska chapter, and also as a vice chair of National Public Policy for AFSP. That is my volunteer job, but I am also a full-time itinerant school social worker, a role I've held for 21 years. In my work, I'm on the front lines, supporting students at risk, responding to deaths by suicide, and serving in the villages immediately following a loss. I have seen firsthand the lasting impact suicide has on families, schools, and the entire communities. Alaska, as you know, continues to face one of the highest suicide rates in the nation, nearly double the national average. For Alaska Native people, the disparity is even greater. In parts of western Alaska, including the Waikato Delta, suicide affects not just individuals, but the entire families across generations and across the state. Many of the communities I serve are off-road system, accessible only by small aircraft. Weather delays can last hours, days, and most villages have no emergency department or crisis stabilization services. In those moments of acute crisis, 988 may be the only immediate connection to help. Caroline, Alaska answered more than 24,000 calls last year. It's clear evidence that Alaskans are reaching out, but a system this critical cannot rely on short-term funding for one-time appropriations. It needs stability. It ensures long-term support for 988 calls, text, and chat services, as well as mobile crisis responses. This strengthens the crisis now framework, reducing strain on law enforcement, and emergency department, and corrections, while connecting people to the right care at the right time. In the YK Delta, I see every day how timing can change outcomes. Our local mental health system has a 24-hour crisis line through the hospital, but after 5 p.m., after hours, a person may have to wait 1 to 2 or more hours for a call back due to limited staffing for on-call crisis. With 988, that call is answered immediately. And in suicide crisis, minutes matter. Please, on behalf of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, the Alaska chapter, and for the state of Alaska, I respectfully urge you to advance Senate Bill 196 and ensure that no Alaskan, no matter how remote, has to face their darkest moments alone. Thank you, Senate Finance, for the time.
Thanks, James. We will now open the public hearing, and we will move to Eagle River, where we will hear from Don Graves. Mr. Graves, please identify yourself and proceed with your 2 minutes of testimony.
Yes, good afternoon, Senator Hoffman and Finance Committee. My name is Don Graves. I'm in Eagle River, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself and personal experiences with suicide and 988. Without beating a dead horse, when it comes to saving lives, it is imperative that we look at things and do the right thing instead of just considering the financial side of it or how that financial impact supports 988. In this case, 988 is a very important number. I've seen where firsthand where a nephew called 911 and was told we won't do anything or help unless something was done illegal. That 988 and steady funding is important to intervene and to support individuals with mental health crises all the time. I urge you and all of you to continue to support SB 96 and to move this forward as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. We will move to Kenai and hear from Ed Martin. Please identify yourself and proceed with 2 minutes of testimony.
Chair Hoffman and members of the Finance Committee. I'm Ed Martin, Jr. I'm a 60-year resident. I would like to have you look a little further into this, because the Alaska Mental Health Authority gives out grants every year. I think that this is misplaced. It does fall in their wheelhouse. I was just on their website. They have $40 million that they have at their disposal to give grants out. Now, whether or not they would give a reoccurring grant for this service, I believe that that Mental Health Trust was established for this exact thing. In fact, they have a comprehensive plan that talks all about this. Now, it's interesting that Katie Baldwin is the operating chief officer, operating officer, and a program manager, hasn't been called as witness to this with regards to what can be funded through our mental health authority. I think they're coming after everybody in the state, yet we have this great million-acre trust and investment in with the help of the permanent fund. There's plenty of money here. I don't think they need this in the fashion in which this bill is, but I do support something that will fund for this crisis situation. Go to the Alaska Mental Health. Have them fork up the money. They have the resources that is way beyond what this needs to be funded for. And, you know, they give grants out every year. So I think you need to talk about this a little bit more, get them to come and see what they can do to support this. And that I would support. So great effort by Senator Kawasaki, but I think it's misplaced. I think the money's there, but it's in a different revenue area which it can be funded.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Martin. We will now go to Cooper Landing and hear from David Neese. Please identify yourself and proceed with 2 minutes of testimony.
All right, David Neese speaking for myself. I'm a little confused because in Senator Kawasaki's letter that explains the bill, he calls it a dedicated fund in paragraph 2, but the bill itself has, in section B, said it's not a dedicated fund. If it's a dedicated fund, it violates Article 9, Section 7 of the Alaska Constitution. If it's not a dedicated fund and it goes into the general fund, then it's subject to annual appropriation, which is no guarantee that you're going to get the money. I think Ed had a good point that you have the Mental Health Land Trust. They've been selling property and generating income. They just need to be encouraged to do this on a basis and then send that money to the Suicide Prevention 988 Fund. They can easily generate the amount of money that you have that this tax, which is or is not lawful, would generate. The fact that the telephone community just does not like this bill is one thing, and the police, they'd like some relief. So the relief comes from the Mental Health Trust Fund. The other thing you have to take a look at is where is this money going? There's a support letter in there from the Caroline Crisis Center. They get $1.7 million in expenses, but only $1.7 million that is actually going to program services. You need to have those numbers flipped. you need to get the $7.7 million going to program services and reduce their operating expenses by $6 million. So looking at those things, as it stands right now, I can't support 196 as written because it creates a dedicated fund or it creates something like the fishing license where, yeah, we promise to pay you if we get enough money. Thank you very much for your time to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Neese. We will go to Anchorage where we will hear from Thea Agnew-Beamben, Special Assistant to Mayor LaFrance. Please identify yourself and proceed with 2 minutes of testimony.
Great. Thanks so much. And thank you to the co-chairs and the members of the committee for having me today. I appreciate the testimony from our chief of police and from our police officer union. I think they did a great job of painting the picture of why this is so important for Anchorage and for everyone here in Alaska. One of the mayor's top priorities coming into office was to increase access to crisis care for everyone in Anchorage and to make sure that we are delivering the right service to each person where and when they need it to help resolve that crisis. This is also a really important part of our efforts to reduce unsheltered homelessness in Anchorage and to ensure that people are getting the care that they need to really address the root causes of those situations where people are often in very high-risk situations and then may also be causing public safety concerns for the rest of the community. So I wanted to share just a little bit of data. So in 2025, our public safety answering point, which is answered first by the police department, received 230,000 loaded calls. We've made it a priority to, as often as possible, as you heard, in our dispatch center to send calls to 988 when that's a viable way of addressing the caller's needs. And in 2025, we sent about 350 calls to 988. We also do have multiple mobile teams that respond to people in crisis. You heard from Chief Case about our mobile intervention team at the police department. We also have a 24/7 mobile crisis team at the fire department, and then the fire department also supervises the Anchorage Safety Patrol, and we operate the Anchorage Safety Center. So those are fully funded by the municipality of Anchorage. We have about 2,500 dispatches per month of those mobile teams, totaling about 26,000 dispatches in 2025. We also, as Angela mentioned, we still have a serious issue with opioid use, overdose, and crisis. The fire department here reported that in 2025 we had over 2,000 opioid-related incidents here in Anchorage. Our health department is working as a really important part of our crisis response work group and team, where we're really seeking to integrate all those services and get people the care that they need. So here in Anchorage, between the fire department and the police department, we now have 13 behavioral health clinicians working as part of those teams. And then, of course, at our health department, we have a full clinical staff.
Ms. Beamben, can you wrap it up over your 2 minutes?
Sure, yeah. I want to share that all of that is municipally funded currently, and while we're very committed to it and there's a lot of support, having some additional resources that can come from other funding sources that are sustainable would greatly help us expand and maintain those services. So I just really urge your support for SB 196, and please let us know if you need more information. Thank you so much.
Can you identify yourself for the record? That was Thea. So we'll go on to stay in Anchorage and hear from Chris Green with the suicide prevention trainer and volunteer. Ms. Green, you have the floor for 2 minutes. Ms. Green, are you on mute? If not, we'll go to Wasilla and hear from Christine O'Connor. Please identify yourself and proceed with your 2 minutes of testimony.
Thank you, Co-Chair Hoffman. Good morning, co-chairs and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Christine O'Connor. I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Telecom Association. ATA's members are the Alaskan telecommunications providers serving communities throughout our state. ATA and our members strongly support access to behavioral health and crisis services. Our companies implemented 988 promptly, converted Alaska to 10-digit dialing to support 988, and we continue to maintain the networks that ensure these calls are delivered reliably statewide. Our concern is not with the goals of this bill, but with how it is funded through a new tax on phone service. First, the flat per-line tax disproportionately impacts seniors, low-income households, and lifeline customers, the very Alaskans who rely most on affordable communications. Second, the bill goes far beyond funding the 988 call center. It creates a broad behavioral health funding stream, which we believe should be supported through established health funding mechanisms. This is very different from the existing 911 funding system. Third, the bill lacks clear safeguards for transparency and regional fairness. Without defined allocation standards, there's a real risk that rural Alaskans will all pay into the system without seeing proportional benefit. Again, this is substantially different from the 911 system, which provides strong local control. Finally, providers will face new administrative burdens that are not fully compensated, particularly impacting small rural carriers. Alaska will receive substantial new federal health funding, whose stated purposes include behavioral health. We believe these new resources should be fully evaluated before creating a new permanent tax. ATA supports strong behavioral health services, but we respectfully believe this is not the right funding approach. Thank you for the opportunity to provide public comment.
Thank you, Ms. O'Connor. We'll stay in Wasilla and hear from David Boyle. Please proceed with 2 minutes of testimony.
Yes, Senator Hoffman, committee members, I'm David Boyle from Wasilla, speaking for myself. Let's just look at it. This is just another tax on people. And I believe it's been overtaken by events. As you know, the Alaska Rural Health Transformation Program is going to get more than $1.3 billion with a B dollars over the next 5 years. So I think that money could also be spent on funding Senator Kawasaki's effort to provide behavioral health. It's a no-brainer there. And as a veteran, I want to speak to that. But veterans, the VA provides excellent behavioral health care in Alaska. Plus, every time you call the VA, guess what? You're told if your ideation is suicide, then it connects you directly to the suicide prevention hotline and has done this for many years. So, in effect, our Alaska veterans are taken well care of. And like a lot of other speakers also mentioned, shouldn't this fall under the purview of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority? What are they doing? They need to sell off a lot of their land and fund this so that we don't have another minute charge on our cell phone lines and our landlines. Finally, I'd like to ask the sponsor, how was it decided that 98 cents was the best number to put on the taxes for us? As you know, years ago, we had a thing called the Universal Services Fund in telecommunications, decades ago, as a matter of fact, by the federal government. That started at a very small amount since, and now it's grown to well over $2. That was made, that came about to subsidize farmers in rural areas that couldn't pay for their rural phone lines. And today, now, it buys cell phones, even for illegal immigrants. So I want to know and ask the sponsor, Senator Kawasaki, how did you decide that 98 cents was the price point for this tax? Thank you, committee members, for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Boyle. We'll go to Anchorage and hear from Ann Ringstead. Please identify yourself and proceed with your 2 minutes of testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hoffman and members of the Senate Finance Committee. My name is Ann Ringstead. I'm the Executive Director for NAMI Alaska. We strongly support Senate Bill 196, which would establish a behavioral health crisis service charge to provide sustainable funding for Alaska's Crisis Now framework and the 988 Suicide and Crisis Hotline, We continue to advocate for strengthening crisis intervention resources across Alaska. And this legislation offers a crucial and predictable funding stream that will ensure Alaskans in crisis receive timely, appropriate, and life-saving care. The flexibility in 196 allows communities to expand mobile crisis response teams, fund 988 call center operations statewide, establish and enhance stabilization centers, and support culturally responsive outreach and care. You've heard so many reasons to pass this legislation today. 988 provides someone to talk to, someone to respond, and a safe place to help. Federal, state, and local governments all have a role to play to ensure that there are resources to support 988 and that this universal number is the gateway to a local crisis continuum of care. We understand that the federal government, the state, and the trust have been funding this 988 number for a number of years, and this will diversify the funding stream. This legislation is not only fiscally responsible, it's life-saving. It will provide the foundation for a stronger, more responsive behavioral health crisis system in Alaska for generations to come. Thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of the legislation.
Thank you, Anne. We'll go back to Wasilla, where we'll hear from Mike Coons. Please identify yourself and proceed with 2 minutes of testimony.
Yeah, this is Mike Coons, and I'm calling from Wasilla, and I'm speaking for myself. As you're paying for the crisis care that Tia Benville from Anchorage was so happy about this bill, then Anchorage, of course Anchorage wants this money. So does Fairbanks, so does Juneau, so does all these other big cities with homeless problems, with the mental health problems that they have with those homeless problems. I'm sick and damn tired of even every time I drive into Anchorage, I'm surrounded by homeless and people that are, you know, having mental health issues. So if Anchorage is so happy about this, then increase your property taxes, Anchorage. Fairbanks, do the same things. Juneau, do the same thing. Go ahead and increase your taxes to the people in your city. Get the hell out of Matsu. Get the hell out of Tok. Get the hell out of all the other places in this state that don't have a mental health issue problem, and what existing is now is taking care of it. So that is just, I mean, this is this is just outlandish. Also, David Neese and David Boyle's comments were spot on. And the other comment is, as a vet and as a retiree, hey, I don't want to be spending another penny out of my pocket for something that's silly as this, much less I've got a budget I stay in. You guys in the Senate Finance, you guys in House Finance, you guys there in the legislature, you don't follow a budget worth a hoot and a holler. So you can keep, if you guys want to put in a dollar into this, knock yourself out. Get your hands out of my pockets. Thank you.
We'll try Chris Green again in Anchorage. Chris, are you online?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Please proceed with your 2 minutes of testimony. Please proceed.
Through the chair, yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Hello. Please proceed.
Chris Green.
Yes, you have the floor.
My name is Chris Green, and I am calling from Anchorage, Alaska, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself. I am calling today to respectfully ask your support of SB 196, establishing a sustainable funding mechanism for the 988 Suicide and Crisis Line. I've been a resident of Alaska since 1982. I am a master trainer in suicide intervention and prevention and have traveled throughout the entire state as both a trainer and volunteer chaplain, providing support and help for families and communities reeling from suicide loss. I know from both personal and professional experience the devastation to individuals,
to families and to communities. I've seen and felt the overwhelming tragedy of suicide effects. 988 is a critical part of Alaska's behavioral health infrastructure. It provides immediate access to trained counselors, helping individuals in distress before situations escalate. For 988 to function effectively, it requires stable and dedicated funding. The proposed surcharge is modest and ensures statewide calls are answered and capacity is maintained throughout Alaska. From a fiscal perspective, this is a smart investment. Early crisis intervention reduces higher cost emergency response that supports better outcomes for individuals and families. Suicide intervention and prevention are critical in Alaska's well-being. SB 196 strengthens a system that's already in place and working but needs reliable support to continue to save lives statewide. 988 saves heartache, and I respectfully urge you to advance Senate Bill 196. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Green. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify at this time? With that, we will close the public hearing. Senator Keel, fiscal notes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 196 has three fiscal notes. The first is from the Department of Administration's Division of Finance. They give a zero fiscal note. They note that it does create a new fund or account, but that they can do their piece of the accounting with existing resources. The second fiscal note is from the Department of Health, Behavioral Health Treatment and Recovery Grants. Their fiscal note is entirely indeterminate, both for grants, impact on grants, and for the funding source, which they note they create a new fund or account. The third fiscal note comes from the Department of Revenue's Tax Division. They assign a fiscal note of $118,300 in the first fiscal year, and just a little less, $114,300 in the out years. The fund source is unrestricted general fund, and that pays for one new permanent full-time position. They do estimate an upfront capital cost of $500,000, half of which is due to needing to implement the bill on an expedited basis because of a pending effective date. The Tax Division says they are currently analyzing the potential revenue impact of the bill, and so they assign an indeterminate change in revenue.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Senator Kawasaki, do you have any closing comments before we set this bill aside?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I just wanted to thank everybody and folks who had testified online today, both in support and in opposition. We look forward to working with this committee on the future of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Kawasaki. Do members have questions of the sponsor? Senator Kaufman.
Thank you to the bill sponsor. From some of the folks that are calling in support the cause, but they're questioning the funding source. And I think part of the heat of that concern around the funding costs, I just did a little bit of arithmetic here at the table as best I could with the typical annual fees and taxes. I assumed a family of four or four lines, which is pretty easy to add up to four lines these days. I know some of us have a couple of phones for different reasons. And that runs from $600 to $1,100 per year. So when people see their phone bill, they see this whole menu of charges, and so I think you're stepping into that minefield with this when you try and tag the cost of this program to that. So there were a couple questions. One was, how did you arrive at the 98-cent amount? What was the origin of that? That's a good one. But then the larger question is, would you consider different source of funding for this with some work on the funding source, because it, I think everyone who called in recognized it's a good cause, but I think the funding source piling onto something that's already loaded up with fees is a concern for some. Thank you.
Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Kaufman, we did look at other avenues for funding. Many other states have done exactly what we're doing right now, and that's trying to find an alternative pathway to fund the 988 number. Again, the 988 number had originally started under federal grants and federal federal money through through the It was a Suicide Prevention Act. It was a national act. It said that this was a great way to communicate with folks. So the money had come out starting in 2022. It had come up until this last year, and now the money is starting to taper off. Other communities have, other states have in have done exactly what we've done, is enact a surcharge, and the number is sort of, we just put a number out there. We didn't really have a number that we thought would fill the needed gap. But there are surcharges across the country that have been implemented for this particular 988. And I mean, we sort of modeled it off the concept of the 911 surcharge. And, you know, I think it was out of simplicity to sort of try to find a funding source. I will say this, though, that I've had a phone. I've had a phone for all my life. I can't remember not having a phone. I've never looked at the taxes and charges on my phone, and I just pay it, and it goes out of my credit card. And I know there's a lot of folks that might look at each detail and each penny spent, but I think if they did, they'd say that each penny spent on a 988 number and to help folks who are in crisis would probably be supportive of that.
Thank you, Senator Kawasaki. Senator Kaufman?
So I take it that your answer is no, you would not consider a different funding source.
Through the chair, Senator Kaufman, I think we would be open to looking at other funding sources. Again, we modeled this after others, some other states that have introduced their own 988 surcharge to be used through telecom. But that's, again, there's probably other states that have done so differently.
Senator Kaufman.
And to me, it seems like the 9-8 is, it's kind of a marketing thing that, you know, 9-8-8, and so that was not stated, but
okay.
That's the answer I expected. It causes me to wonder what, for this program, how much do we need, and is the 9-8 is that a good funding number? Is that a camel's nose under a tent for increases in the future on this? So I'd like to work with you and find out what we're doing there with funding, how much, why, and how. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Kaufman. Further questions of the prime sponsor, Merrick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Kawasaki, do you know how many phone lines are in Alaska? Got that
right. So we're trying to chicken scratch a number out and how many phone lines and how many numbers would actually, because there is a cap of 100 per like organization or unit. So we'd have to get that number to you.
Thank you.
Senator Merrick.
And Mr. Chairman, if you could also provide how many accounts are in Alaska. So if we were just to charge 98 cent per account, mm-hmm. I'd be curious about that number as well.
Thank you, Senator Merrick. Further questions? Seeing none, we'll set this bill aside. That concludes the agenda for today. Next meeting will be Monday morning. The agenda will be announced later. With that, we are adjourned.